FSN Radio.
It's all about what's next.
Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports.
The Financial Survival Network.
It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to and perhaps even watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is 12/8/2020. Well, who would ever think we could have gotten to the point where we're at now? But here we are. And sure, the historians will spend a long time. It's kind of like if you go back to school, spent a lot of time on the Romans, the Greeks, the Sumerians, then you skip through to Europe and the Renaissance, you kind of skip the Dark Ages. They will be spending, you just picture those children in future classrooms in 2200, 2500, looking at this America era, the Anglo-American era, and thinking, man, they must have had mass distribution of hallucinogenics and mass fluoridation of water for people to be that crazy and that stupid all at the same time. Well, we'll find out more about that. But for now, we're here with John Rubino. And make sure you go over to his site, sign up for his newsletter. And that, of course, is dollarcollapse.com. And John, and like, we're going to have to start expanding the show here because we've just got too much to cover. Lockdowns. I mean, California is no longer going to be the golden state. It's going to be the lockdown state.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, big lockdowns are coming, you know, in California and in New York City. And man, that totally changes the rationale for being in places like that, right? Because if there are no restaurants or bars or anything like that open, why would you go to Manhattan? And what do you do in L.A.? And that's what we're doing now. And there's one other fact that, but it was a headline I saw that I thought was too good to even check. But it was that in San Francisco now, they've banned smoking indoors. In other words, in your apartment, except for weed. You can still smoke weed. You just can't smoke anything else, or it's a criminal offense. You've got to wonder what becomes of these places that were, you know, kind of hard to live in, but had, you know, extraordinary culture to offset the fact that it's incredibly expensive and in many other ways difficult to be there. You know, I have no idea what the rationale for going to Manhattan is right now if there are no restaurants open. And California, being out doing things is the point of being there. You know, you're not going to sit at home in LA, right? But now you have to. You have to just sit there and not go out or anything. So the economies of a lot of big cities are just going to be crushed by this because they were already going bankrupt. You know, we need to make sure that we don't attribute everything to the COVID-19 lockdowns, because a lot of these places were already trending towards some form of default and or bankruptcy because of their pension problems and their infrastructure problems and just general mismanagement. And this accelerated. This brought it to the point where it happens next year in a lot of cases. So I don't know. Besides just you and I feeling sorry for ourselves about how restrictive our lives are, this has got to be a nightmare for an awful lot of people who don't work online. You know, if you're in the service industries or something like that, this has got to be just dragging on forever, because we're heading for the 1 year anniversary of this thing with no real end in sight. I mean, other than forced vaccinations and things like that, and hopefully, as you were mentioning before we went live, some cures that are available now and seem to be working. You know, because already we know that melatonin, vitamin D, zinc, and a couple of other things are, you know, they're cheap over-the-counter supplements you can take, and they cut the death rate dramatically for COVID-19. So we already have ways of dealing with this, but it doesn't seem like that's percolated into public policy yet. So we'll have to see how long it takes the politicians to catch up with the health reality here.
Yeah, the infection fatality rate, or the IFR, has plunged by like 95%. And We know that there are deaths being attributed to COVID that have nothing to do with it. I saw a funny meme the other day. Poor people die of COVID, COVID-19 when engulfed in explosion at meth factory. You know, you can't make this stuff up. One thing, going back to the lockdowns, sheriffs in California are refusing to enforce it. Sheriff in Riverside, and the wacko, over-the-top leftist sheriff in L.A. County are refusing to force it. So he said, you know, go talk to the health department. This is not the police's function. You go take care of it. And in New York, we had a couple of sheriffs there refuse to enforce it. It's just insane, because I don't know about the death rate. I mean, I'm just not buying these numbers. They make no sense. They make about as much sense as the election results, the COVID stats, you know, because in Florida, should have mentioned, Governor DeSantis has ordered the labs to disclose the degree of amplification, if you will, because they do the PCR test in order to find the virus. Sometimes they have to like do this amplification or magnification up to 40 times. In which case, 97% of the people who get tested wind up testing positive. So he has said, all right, you've got to show us that amplification number as well. We want that reported from the labs. And that could make a big difference, because if at normal amplification, 5% or 3% or whatever it is actually come up positive, but the more you amplify, the higher the positivity rate goes up, then we've got like a real problem, because we're using the incorrect metrics. Kind of like if we were using actual increase in wealth rather than GDP to actually measure our economy to figure out what was really happening, because then you would have to deduct debt from increases in economic activity, and then it would paint a very ugly picture. In this case, it's the opposite, where we would find out that the picture is not as dreary or horrible as they're painting it. And we'll just have to see. So the weekly jobs report, that's W-E-A-K-L-Y, very weak report. And I think they're probably getting the printing presses ready now as we speak, John.
Yeah. First of all, we've got these lockdowns, which are economically really debilitating. And now, even before these new lockdowns kicked in, the number of new jobs that we're creating has just cratered from expectations. You know, people thought it would continue at a really high rate, and it's not, which means the economy is starting to roll over again, which means in turns we're going to get stimulus of some sort here. It looks like the thing that they're going to pass shortly is going to be pretty modest, nowhere near enough to offset, you know, locking down California and New York. So I think we have some stock market issues coming shortly, because the way the game has been played for the last few years or few decades, depending on the measurements you want to use, is that stocks will go up as long as they expect dramatic new stimulus to be coming their way. And as soon as that stops, as soon as they lose faith in that, they tank. And that forces the government to come back with even bigger kind of, you know, stimulus of some sort. And I think we're headed for that again, because stocks have been rocking lately in anticipation. Well, first of all, I think we had there's not going to be a civil war after all relief rally when it looked like we weren't just going to, you know, divide in two and start shooting at each other. And then they continued to go up when it was expected that they would get some really big stimulus program, either, you know, even lower interest rates or, checks sent out to every person or some kind of direct corporate subsidy. It's hardly even worth mentioning in today's world.
A rounding error.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like pocket knowledge.
Yeah. And so stocks are at unprecedentedly high valuation levels now. And this is including 1929 and the 1999 point in the tech stock bubble. We're more richly valued now than we were in those extraordinary bubble times from the past. So in those, you know, in every previous era when things got this out overvalued, stocks collapsed. So historically, we're at the point now where you normally do get a crash. And if the stimulus bill disappoints investors, there's a decent chance that we get another, you know, something equivalent to what happened in March when everything just fell apart, or something worse, you know? So I think we need to be on the lookout for that, because stocks are just behaving like the last 2 weeks of a bubble right now. You know, you're seeing IPO activity go through the roof too, besides everything else, you know, besides tech stocks going up and a lot of other high flyers going up. Now we're seeing richly valued IPOs come out, where not only are they, you know, they're selling their companies for a lot of money, but they're raising the prices at which they're selling their stock going forward. So I'm very worried about the stock market and kind of anxious to do more shorting here.
Yeah, Airbnb is going public. All right, so that's a real company. They have real earnings, even though they've been hurt by COVID. In fact, they're going to do better because the hotels are going to be closing. You know, in New York, you've got less than 10% occupancy rate in hotels, which means that every hotel in New York City is bankrupt. Not even a question about it. They all have big mortgages. They're all going to be in default if they're not already. And the hotel chains won't really be hurt that badly because they don't own a lot of their properties. There are investors and they have management contracts, but that's kind of a given. But DoorDash, just a delivery service that picks up your food at the restaurant and brings it to your door. This is no great value added here. It's a total laziness factor. You pay a fee for it. They can't charge enough. It's one of those things. We just want to build up our customer base and then we'll find ways to make money. Maybe we'll sell them breath mints along with their dinner or something like that. Or maybe they'll just start a cannabis delivery service. I don't know how they're going to make money. This, you know, there's a bunch of these services that make no sense whatsoever. But, we've not really talked about these SPACs, John. You know, the SPACs are like a blank check company. They come out of the woodwork. They call it, a special purpose acquisition corporation. But who knows what they're really going to be acquiring, because you're buying them blind and you're hoping that the management that's in the prospectus is really going to be able to do something. It's a hope and change type entity. It really, I don't even know why they're allowed. I guess they have some purpose, but you know that they're going to blow up all these SPACs. There's billions and billions of dollars going into them. What's your take on the SPACs?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Today's show is brought to you by Mustango River Resources. Their flagship projects are located in Kirkland Lake, an established gold camp that has historically produced over 70 million ounces of gold. The Kirkland West Project is a high-grade gold project beside Kirkland Lake Gold's world-class Macassa Gold Mine, one of the highest-grade mines in the world. The Umeja Project is an advanced-stage project with 600,000-plus ounces of gold along the Cadillac Break, 25 kilometers east of Macassa. Their projects have the potential to transform into another world-class mining camp in the Kirkland Lake District. Make sure you go over to mistango.com. That's mistango.com. Take a look and sign up for notifications. Stock is traded on the Canadian Stock Exchange, ticker symbol MIS. For more information and to sign up for notifications, go to mistango.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Well, I think it's one of those things that happens at the peak of a market cycle. When people just get so excited, they throw money at pretty much anything. And you know, they shouldn't be illegal, because the law shouldn't protect the extremely stupid from the results of their stupid behavior. But they are a sign that things have gone too far, that there's just too much money sloshing around out there. Because, you know, you have so many signs of this IPO activity, obviously, and Robinhood trading, where all the millennials are out there, you know, spending their stimulus checks and the profits that they've made from their stimulus checks. You know, I'm hearing from a lot of people who are in their 20s who are making tons of money and have concluded that it's easy to do. You know, this is so similar to the late 1990s when everybody thought, you know, you can get rich for life just by buying tech stocks and letting them ride, and which worked for about 5 years and then emphatically did not work in 2000. Same thing with a lot of Robinhood traders. Now they've had 6 months or 8 months of buying stuff that then went up, and now, oh man, I made $110 on this and I made $75 here. And so they're starting to think that if they just double the amount of money that they invest, they'll make $300 or $150 on their next trade, you know, and so they're pouring money into stocks that they recognize, like Tesla and Netflix. And, you know, this will end badly because it always does end badly. But the number of things that are showing up now as peak of the cycle signs are really proliferating. You know, we probably have more things to point to now than we've ever had at the peak of any previous cycle. And yeah, you know, these SPACs are just one more thing because, you know, normally you invest in something that is already proven and hope that it continues to improve from a pretty good point to begin with. With these SPACs, you're just throwing money at somebody who may or may not have a history of success in the past and saying, okay, I'll trust you to do some other good thing after these other good things. And, you know, it may work, it may not work. But the fact that people are willing to invest blindly like this means that there's too much money out there and that the cycle is going to turn at some point. So the question becomes, does it turn right away because valuations are insane and all this activity is happening that normally presages some kind of a downturn? Or does the government panic and give us another massive, you know, $3 or $4 trillion stimulus plan here, which creates a lot of new money, which flows as it has to into financial assets and gives us another leg up? You know, that's possible. It's possible the valuations, as crazy as they are, could get even more crazy just because so much money is being just printed out of thin air and tossed into the market. Yeah. That's the short seller's dilemma right now. You know, just based on history, you short everything in sight right now, right? But history is not a good guide to a world where governments think it's okay to create $3 or $4 trillion out of thin air and just hand it to people. We've never been here before. But, you know, a sign that the second level effects are starting to take place is the dollar tanking. Have you noticed that? Dollar index.
Yes.
Even against the other crappy currencies, the dollar is down by about 10% in just the last few months. And that's a big sign. If that continues, that trend negates all the other good trends out there.
It's down right now as we're speaking. It's down to 90.74 on the Dixie. I've got a great idea for a SPAC. Elon Musk SPAC. That's all you got to call it, is the Elon Musk SPAC. And he'll just raise $100 billion. And then he'll figure out what to do with it. Because everything he touches turns to gold. He'll probably be able to do it.
They already have one of those. It's called Tesla.
Yeah, but that's not a SPAC. You know, like, hey, and it worked once. It'll work again and again and again until it doesn't, right?
Oh, Kerry, wait, this leads us back to something I forgot to mention to you about cities. How, you know, we're seeing an exodus from big cities right now because people who live there, you know, they're paying a fortune and in return they get great restaurants and stuff like that. Well, they don't have the great restaurants anymore. Rents are still insanely high. There was civil unrest and there was a pandemic in the last year, all of which hit cities harder than any place else. So people are leaving. But, you know, you have things in cities like extremely fast internet, which mean people who need something like that can't leave. So they can go to the suburbs or the experts, but they can't go to the homestead that they would really like to go to now, because all you got out there is crappy satellite.
Dial up.
Yeah, it's terrible. Like, go to HughesNet's, that's one of the big satellite internet companies, reviews section, and they're scathing. Nobody likes it that has it. But speaking of Elon Musk, his SpaceX company is starting a new low orbit satellite internet company that is now in beta testing, and the results are excellent. It's like 175 Mbps, a service out in the country, you know, which is that's fast enough to basically do freelance coding or something like that from a farmhouse anywhere. So that might be the death knell for big cities.
Or a bunker in New Zealand.
Yeah. You can go, and that's going to be global. So you can not only go to Missoula, you know, a farm outside Missoula, Montana, if you want to, you can go to Belize or Costa Rica and have acceptably fast internet. So now, why would you be living in Los Angeles or New York under those circumstances, you know, with all the other pathologies that even if we've opened the restaurants again in big cities, you know that then the next pandemic could come along at any time. Civil unrest could hit at any time. Why would you put yourself in the path of something like that when you can have chickens and a garden and a beautiful sunsets at night and a gorgeous morning to wake up to
on water and air.
Yeah, right? All that stuff. And still have good enough internet to be connected to the outside world. So this is a big technological threat to the big congested major cities right now, which they may not be pricing in yet, you know, because commercial real estate could be the short of a lifetime here if that turns out to be true.
Yeah. So the Elon Musk, I can't remember the name of the service you're talking about, but that's just the starting speed. It's going to go a lot higher. It'll rival fiber once it's up and running. The other thing is 5G could lead to the demise of cities as well. Because pretty soon 5G will be all over the country, whether it fries our brains or not. We don't need to have that discussion. But 5G, once it's universal, you'll be able to get it any place, and maybe not in really rural areas, not as much. But other than that, smaller, off the beaten path cities like Bismarck, North Dakota, or like you said, Missoula, or where you used to live in Idaho, you'll be able to get 5G, and that will basically get rid of your Wi-Fi in your house too. So you'll just be trading one radio wave that'll kill you for another. What's the difference? Well, it wouldn't be complete. We got a couple more topics here. Vaccine trials. And hey, did you sign up to be a guinea pig? How much are they paying for this?
They're going to have to pay a lot to get me to do it. But one of the things they're doing now is, they're considering, in order to speed up these trials, infecting healthy people with COVID-19 instead of just, you know, dividing groups up and giving one a vaccine and the other not and having them live their lives. They're actively going to infect people with this stuff. You know, you can't make this stuff up. It's just, you know, in California, you can't smoke cigarettes in your apartment, but you can't smoke weed. And now they're going to infect us as a way of saving us from COVID-19. It's astounding what's happening right now. And, you know, the side effects that they're listing for these vaccines are pretty extreme. It's like, you know how you hear those drug commercials on TV, and then at the end, somebody speaks really quickly and goes through all the horrible stuff that can happen as side effects with this drug, but it still takes them like 15 or 20 seconds to get through all the stuff that can happen. Sounds like the same thing with these vaccines. You know, you can literally death is one of the side effects of some of the vaccines they're testing. And the newest version of them are called RNA vaccines that are a form of gene therapy, which is where they rewrite your DNA. And the early trials of gene therapy killed a lot of people. That's why it has taken so long to come to market with these things. It sounded like miracles if they worked, but they worked enough of the time to be exciting, but they also killed people. So those things didn't come to market. And some of the new vaccines have aspects of gene therapy. So, you know, this frankly scares me. I personally would rather just take my chances with the vaccine. And I definitely don't want to be forced into taking a vaccine, you know, which is the next stage where they say, okay, well, you can't do these things that you want to do unless you show us a card that says you've been vaccinated. It's like, you know, you can't live in a rental house unless your dogs have had rabies vaccine. That's what we're doing right now. We have dogs in a rental house. And one of the criteria is that the dogs have to be vaccinated. Well, it's going to be like that for us pretty soon, it sounds like, where there's a lot of things we can't do, like fly overseas without that vaccination card. So I don't know. This has aspects of creeping fascism in it that are really disturbing when you see them all lined up one after the other.
Yep. No vaccine, no travel. That seems to be the biggest one that they're going to hold over our heads, that if you don't actually get vaccinated, they won't let you on an airplane, or you'll have to have a rapid COVID test or something like that. But like you said, I'll take my chances with COVID as opposed to the vaccines. After I see 100 million people get it and then see the fallout from it, I don't trust them in the least. They're being rushed to market, not properly tested. We know this for a fact. Hey, so no discussion would be complete without a talk about the election turmoil. We saw a video come out of Atlanta where it certainly appears like they're just manufacturing votes appearing out of thin air, giving Biden the margin. We've seen tens of thousands of affidavits. We saw them test a Dominion voting machine after the election, put in 100 votes each for Biden and Trump, and somehow, you know, not all votes are created equal, John. We're heading for the ultimate showdown, and that could lead to major turmoil too, couldn't it?
Yeah, we are not still out of the potential civil war phase of this process, because right now we've got two separate worlds in the U.S. We've got one group of people who is watching the process of these election result investigations with interest and concluding that chunks of the election were stolen. And we've got another group that isn't even hearing anything about this. They're watching MSNBC or CNN, and they don't even know it's going on. Or to the extent that they know it's going on, they assume it's some little pocket of crazies who are just stretching out the results of this election, with some ulterior motive, but they aren't finding anything that's worthwhile. Everything's been debunked, right? Yeah. And, you know, you've got these two sets of people who apparently aren't talking to each other. They're not seeing each other's sources of information. And when the results are finally in, you know, when this is finalized, one group is going to think they were ripped off and the other group is going to think they've got justice. And I don't see any way around this because as we talked about last week, the majority of Republicans already think the Democrats stole the election. And if these videos and things are really compelling that are out there now, where, you know, you see everybody go home from Atlanta, from the vote counting station, and then two or three people remain. And on the CCTV, you see them pull out things that look like suitcases and open them up and start taking ballots out and feeding them into the machines. So what is that if it's not some kind of criminal vote manipulation activity? We really need to find that out. And if it turns out that, you know, there was cheating in a few places, but it's not enough, what we find is not enough to tip the election, an awful lot of people are going to believe that, well, if this is what we found, then there's probably a lot more and the election really was stolen. You know, that's going to be the conventional wisdom among half the population when this settles.
Yeah, more than half. Because if the election was in fact stolen, we don't know that for sure. Speaking as a lawyer, it hasn't been proven to me yet. Yes, we know there's a lot of hanky-panky, a lot of stuff going on here, but they haven't proven it yet. Statistically, I think there's a really strong argument that the way the votes came in, virtually impossible for it to have happened that way. But I don't know that a court can really rule on the basis of statistics. You could make the analogy to DNA testing. There's a 1 in 87 trillion chance that it could be somebody else's whose DNA was found on the scene, or whatever it is, 1 in 99 million chance. And we could very well be talking about that, but is that enough to actually set aside the results of an election? Maybe. The court's going to have to make up their mind on that. But if those machines are really rigged the way that first test they said they were, and we haven't seen it happen, I'd like to see the video of that test. of them putting, and these were CPAs doing it. And that's the thing. If we're going to audit elections, we're going to have elections. Put the accountants in charge of it, because all elections are is counting. And there's no other profession in our society, other than maybe math teachers, that know how to count better than accountants. In the name of the profession, accountant. Saying it wrong, but you know, it's silly. So auditors, you know, this is what they do. They count money, they count votes. It doesn't matter. They're counting something. They're counting inventory. They're counting widgets. Put the CPAs in charge of this stuff and get rid of everybody else, because nobody else knows anything. And the other thing that accountants do is they have fraud tests. So they actually test the numbers for fraud. And that's what needs to be done here. Get rid of all the other idiots. I don't want to hear from them anymore. I don't want to listen to the lawyers make their lawyerly arguments. Just get the accountants in there.
Hey. Well, you know, the idea that we can't run a coherent election is just astounding, right? I mean, we've got the world's reserve currency. We have the money that everybody else in the world trusts and wants to hold on to because they think we've got it together. You know, the rest of the world thinks that we are the most rock solid, best run society that there is. Therefore, you know, dollars are their reserve assets. But when they watch us turn out to be completely unable to run an election so that we find out who wins that night or even the next day. And here we are weeks. How many weeks has it been? It's been a long time. And we still don't know for sure. You know, we're still battling over who cheated what.
Over a month. Hey, and that leads to the next thing. Gold and silver rebounding. Gold up high 20s, nearly $30 an ounce. Silver up nearly half a buck an ounce. I haven't looked at the price, so they might have... Let's look at Kitco right now and take a look so we can actually be intelligent. Gold up 26.60 the ounce, silver up 51 cents per ounce. That's a big move. Silver, that's 2%, over 2%. And question is, John, is this just a rebound, a bounce from an oversold situation? Or have we commenced the next upward leg of the precious metals bull market? My gut says that it's probably the latter and not the former, but my head says at some point this isn't just going to be a bounce, it's going to be the next leg starting out, and that could happen at any time, not according to anyone's schedules. I know the charts. I look at the charts regularly just like you. What's your take on it?
Well, I think fundamentally gold really can't go down in a world where $3 or $4 trillion stimulus plans are just normal now. So this is a secular bull market for precious metals. But the question of what happens in the next 6 months or so, I think is it has so many cross currents that I don't know if we can make any predictions, because normally you've got seasonality going where usually gold and silver do a little correction early in December and then take off for the next 3 months because of Asian buying. Okay, so you've got that, and we're kind of sort of following that pattern now where we had a correction and it's time for the metals to start rising again. So that's pretty much historically normal behavior, what's happening now, what happened in the last few weeks. But of course, you've got all this other stuff going on that's unprecedented. You know, we've got the potential for more civil unrest. We've got these COVID lockdowns. We've got wildly overvalued stocks. And we've got probably big stimulus coming in response to all this other stuff. So I am worried about a replay of March where everything went down, right? Stocks tanked and that pulled down precious metals and the miners just cratered. You know, you had a lot of gold and silver mining stocks that went down by 70% in 2 weeks. And then subsequently, once the stimulus started again, they went back up and then some, you know, so we had a total recovery from that crash. But the crash could still happen again. If the stock market feels like it has to throw a tantrum in order to get that $3 trillion of stimulus that it wants, that could suck gold and silver down too. So, you know, we could see a nasty correction here. But when that results in a big new stimulus plan, precious metals will just take off. So, you know, one way to, well, the best way to trade this is probably just go to the golf course or the beach. Don't even think about it for 6 months and just let it all happen. But if you're going to be obsessive like you and me and watch it and wonder if we can profit from it somehow, then maybe you want to put in some lowball offers on some great mining companies. And if, you know, if gold and silver tank and that pulls down the miners, maybe you get some of these things that's on sale for 60% off. You load up on them down there. And then when the stimulus hits, you make four or five times your money in the next year. You know, that's what happened in March. And it does feel like a replay of that is coming.
Hey, March is right around the corner, right? We did manage to make it through September and October relatively unscathed. We did have a little correction in September, but it was very mild by what it could have been. But March is right around the corner. March is turning into a crash month. Maybe this is what we're going to see next here, John. But in any event, that's it for this week. Make sure you go over to John's site, dollarcollapse.com, our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for both our newsletters. Promise you interesting reading and lots of info you're just not going to find anywhere else or very few places, especially now that that voices are being silenced. Luckily, we're economic, we're not political, so far nobody cares about us, but that could change very quickly. In any event, John, we will catch up with you next week and we'll see what happens then.
See you, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.